You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. Thank you for joining us. 855-752-4842. Aaron working hard on the board for us today. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney friend and host of Amicus The Law Review on Saturdays here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, happy Friday, man.
Dom, back again. What a pleasure to be with you here in Waukesha, but throughout the state of Wisconsin. Delighted to join you.
It is my pleasure. Before we get down to the dirty business, let's do a little fun. The goal for the green or gold text to win statewide contest. I know lots of folks are playing. So here is the magical word. Ring. Ring.
Ring.
Ring. Lord of the Rings. Ring is the magical word. So the goal for the gold, green or gold text to win Civic Media contest is statewide. It is Ring. You download the Civic Media app, find your favorite station, use the text button at the bottom to text in Ring for your chance to win the statewide contest. Hourly winners, grand prize winner. This is great. A pair of indoor club tickets to see the green and gold in Green Bay Monday, December 23rd against New Orleans. The key word there being indoor, because I've been to a few December games, man, and it can be cold. So once again, folks, the word of the hour is Ring. Good luck to all of you. So, Jim, kind of, you know, jawboning before the show here. Lots and lots and lots.
Many things happening in America these days, my friend.
I guess I want to start with where we were talking last, since it's fresh on our mind.
Yes.
The court cases and the differences in the judge's reaction to the filings in the state and federal court.
Right.
There's Tanya Chutkan, who continues to move along. She said last month, this trial will not yield to the election cycle.
There you go.
We are not revisiting the trial date. Now, on the other hand, Juan Merchan from the state court, right
up the street in Manhattan, right?
It has taken a different tack, seemingly continuing to delay, to punt a little bit on this or that, hasn't made a decision on the immunity. But as you pointed out to me also back earlier this month, the federal judge, Donald Trump, trying to kick this case into federal court was pretty quick to react and say, right. No, hell no.
Absolutely. And so that's my curiosity here, my friend, and scratching my head as I have been ever since that time, that you've got a judge, a federal judge, and his name, as you just indicated, Dom, is Alvin Hellerstein.
We all know
Alvin, right? We have not appeared in front of him, but he's a good federal judge there. And what happens is that Donald Trump says, I want that sentencing, that hush money case, that conviction by a jury there, 34 counts of state law violations. Let's take this into federal court. And so he files a motion in federal court. It gets assigned to Judge Hellerstein there. And Hellerstein, in a course of about a few days, in a 4-page order, says, these are private, unofficial acts. Nothing about this is presidential. Nothing about this is executive.
Hush money payments were private, unofficial acts outside the bounds of executive authority.
There you go.
That sounds like it had nothing to do with him being president, man.
Sounds pretty clear, does it not? And so he's talking again about an issue that's relevant exactly to what Donald Trump then is petitioning for in the Manhattan court, the court from which he wanted to escape, right?
Right.
And so my question is, if it's that straightforward and you've got a federal judge, doesn't have to be a federal judge, any judge, lots of people looking at this and saying, what is paying Stormy Daniels off to, what does that got to do with the presidency?
He cut some of those checks
while he was sitting
in the Oval Office.
There were a few of them that were signed off on by him while he was sitting there, apparently in our Oval Office. And again, a few conversations with Hope Hicks. Those happened also in
working hard for the American
there
people.
You go. All that happening. And that, frankly, again, it's not to poo-poo completely the argument, but that is the defense argument that, well, that's the reason why these are official acts. And he was doing that while he was president. And the reality is that issue, while there's a little bit of a tendril into the White House, the reality is that all this conspiracy, this is all cooked up, right? In October of 2016, everything happened. Virtually all the testimony was before he was president, right? Before January 20th of 2017. And so the question is, if it's that easy for Alvin Hellerstein to look at this and say, hey, no, they're there. Why? A good, decent, wonderful judge. He knows what he's doing. He's tenured. Why is Juan Merchan taking this long a period of time to make what is basically the same decision and say, in effect, the Supreme Court's immunity decision is very interesting. You can disagree with it, as I do, as I suspect many people do.
Yes.
But the reality is it applies to official acts. It applies to, as you just said, Dom, it applies to presidents. He wasn't president when this happened. So why not issue the same kind of 2 or 4 page order saying, you know what, there's no there. I'm going ahead. And instead, what Juan Merchan does is he postpones the sentencing for a second time. Dom, you and I know well. First, Donald Trump is going to be sentenced on July 11th.
I couldn't wait, man. Right before the RNC in Milwaukee. My expectation, we're going to have a convicted and known sentence for this man. But no, that was delayed.
While they're meeting in Milwaukee, didn't happen. And what happens, of course, is that Juan Merchan says, okay, I'll let you brief this argument to me. And that, you know, so it's 10 days after the Supreme Court. That briefing, all that argument, that's done in August. And it's been sitting there since then. And Juan Merchan, again, with due respect, could do this at any time, could have done this at any time. Instead, what he says is, okay, give me more time. I need to do this. And then reschedules it. It was supposed to happen this week. On September 16th, Monday, he was supposed to issue his decision. And Donald Trump was supposed to have been sentenced. That's right. My friend, 48 hours ago on September 18th, we were supposed to do this.
Yeah.
And what Juan Merchan says, well, we're now, because this has been pending so long, we're now in the midst of campaign season. Because of the times in which we're living, it's inappropriate for me to continue with this. I'm not going to sentence him in September. I'm going to postpone this now for a second time into November.
Didn't Trump and his attorneys specifically ask for this?
Absolutely. It's on their motion. It was on their request. They said.
And Alvin Bragg, the prosecutor, did not object.
Stunningly. Again, the criticism coming from me is applying to everybody, apparently, Dom. Again, prosecutors, as we always talk, need to be impartial, need to be balanced on all this.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was convicted four months ago. This is not a situation where, gosh, we're speeding along to sentencing. We don't have enough time to do this. And Alvin Bragg says, well, whatever you decide, Judge. And interestingly, in the order from Juan Merchan saying, I'm going to reschedule this again until after the election, Merchan takes a bit of a shot at Alvin Bragg and says, you know what? I don't get quite what you're doing. Normally, prosecutors do, in fact, want this. But frankly, if all the parties want me to postpone this,
okay. What's he going to do with that?
Right?
I mean, he could take his own judgment and decide to do that. But then, you know, he would be judged, quote unquote, as well. Jim, from your experience, after a conviction like this, 4 months you mentioned,
right,
should have been that should have been done 2 months ago, a month. I mean, how long can it take? I know this one's seemingly taking long. What's your experience?
Right. It's a big motion. There's no doubt this immunity issue. It kind of changed the world. It changed America on July 1, right? So it's no small thing. At the same time, you know, and you do need some time. We talked before on these broadcasts about the need for their preparation of what's called a pre-sentence report. That's where documents are put together about the defendant, and the judge has the benefit of that. That takes some time. But 4 months, even in the federal system, usually it's maybe 2, maybe 3. Now we're coming up. It'll be 4, 5, 6 months or so. That work has been long done. And so it's all in the, not the official records. It's not in public records, but this could have been done long before. He could have been sentenced 2 days ago without any corruption of basic speedy trial and sentencing processes. This could have been done. And that is my criticism, again, of Juan Merchan, not only to take all this time to decide what's a very clear issue, but second, to postpone it because of politics.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right to me. Contrasting that with Judge Chutkins, who's absolutely not.
She goes just in the opposite direction. She says, you know, Donald Trump, you're a defendant here. I'm going to give you every single benefit, procedurally substantive, of any defendant. You happen to be running for the presidency. I recognize that. But that's not going to infiltrate my courtroom here.
Well, she goes in just the opposite. It's also kind of easy for her to say, Jim, because they're just starting that process out.
They are.
You know, Judge Merchan's on the tail end of this thing, and he will be judged based on what he does. Is it possible Judge Merchan is trying to alleviate the conspiracy that everyone's after Donald Trump? Everyone's trying to get me the martyrdom that would be with Donald Trump if, you know, it comes in and sentences him to jail, perhaps. Right.
Absolutely. And so if you separate out the legal issues that, well, I'll call them the Tanya Chutkan appropriate issues and say process should require this, you can understand what Judge Merchan has done if you identify its motivation as being political. And you say, you know what, to your martyrdom issue, I don't want to add more in this political process to a candidate who's already been the subject, now, as we know, a couple of days ago, a second assassination attempt.
Right.
But more importantly, I don't want to infect, if you will, is what he is saying, the political process by saying, here is what I'm going to be sentencing you to. Could be a term of imprisonment. That would be significant. Maybe not. But I'm not going to add more grist to that argument that, gosh, look, now, once again, the state court has imposed the sentence upon me. And for that reason, everybody is out to get me. That's a justification for it. But my point, as your point, I think, as well, is just this. That's not a legal justification. That's because you're playing around in politics in the campaign of the time. And that's not something you're going to find in the state criminal code there in New York, in the Manhattan court.
If in the eyes of history, you know, a month or two, Jim, probably not going to make a big deal. Is he justified, aside from the political portion of it? And I agree with you, man. I mean, I think you go forward no matter what. But there is this martyrdom. There is the times that we are living in, and there are some crazy people out there. Is he justified in this decision-making process and punting this down until after the election if he's concerned about the safety of the citizenry?
Sure, absolutely. And that once again, that's closer to something rule of law related, right? You don't want to get people killed as a result of this. You don't want to have right now there being protests all over because of what you've done on September 18th, right? And again, in the world in which we live, you don't want that violence out there. That's a legitimate consideration of any judge. Again, tempered, I think, somewhat by the timing.
Do you think that violence is tempered if Donald Trump loses the election and then gets sentenced to prison?
I don't know that it will. I don't know that it will. That's the point. That's the point. November 26th, maybe not, no different.
You're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in. Happy Friday. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays, right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 a.m. to 11. We're going to give you a little piece of this today, of course, and taking your calls, 855-752-4842. We got miles to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Oh, you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines 855-752-4842. The word of the day for the goal, for the green or gold text to win statewide contest here at Civic Media. The word of the day is ring. Ring. Give us a ring at 855-752-4842. Aaron will slightly screen your calls. James Santel in studio with me today. Talking of the many myriad of legal issues addressing this country. And specifically, we're talking about Donald Trump's current trials in the state court and, of course, in the federal courts, the kind of differences between the judges' actions on this.
He's keeping judges busy these days, which I suppose is a positive thing, right, Dom?
And the attorneys are getting,
right, exactly.
Presumably they're getting paid.
There's
a lot. I guess if you have hundreds of millions of dollars, you can delay things Mark Meadows this week tried to do the same thing in Arizona, tried to get this criminal election subversion case pulled into federal court instead of the state court. And like Hellerson, the judge in New York, the federal judge who denied Trump's effort to do the same thing, Mr. Meadows was also denied for basically the same reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly it. You've got a federal judge there that, again, looks at what is going on. Again, those are not hush money charges, of course, in Arizona. That is election interference, right? That's a state case, a state criminal prosecution, but alleging once again that you did some things there along with others, including fake electors there, other people that were trying to undermine the results of the election there in that particular state. Federal judge, again, got this motion in front of him and says, you know, remove this, take this out of the state court, get it into federal court because this is all official stuff. And the judge basically says, well, wait a minute, you're the chief of staff in the West Wing of the White House at the time that this happened, and you're maintaining that there is something federal and official about these actions to try to undermine the election that was done in your official capacity. Is that right, Mr. Meadows? And he says, no, that can't possibly be. And for that reason, he says there's no federal jurisdiction, no federal hook here, and denies his motion. So Mark Meadows continues to remain in state court there, as he has done. He's tried to do the same thing in Georgia, right? Yeah. All these things, trying to get out from under state court, trying to get delays, obviously, which is the other thing that all these things accomplish, trying to get out from where you are. None of them successful, even though we don't have trial dates.
Jim, is there any circumstance that you can think of where the job description of any federal job would entail overthrowing the very federal government for which you work?
It would be impossible to imagine, right? And if you think about it, to get very serious here on a Friday afternoon, that's really the principal criticism of this immunity decision, right? That says that you've got a president. We have an office of the presidency now for the first time in 238 years where a president can commit crimes, including, as Sonia Sotomayor said, taking a bribe for a pardon, ordering SEAL teams to go and assassinate political, all those things are crimes. They're not official. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives you the right to do that or the capacity to do that. And the Supreme Court basically is saying, well, you'd be immune for those kinds of things. That's really what the principal argument is, but how absolutely, absolutely unfounded and Constitution changing that decision on July 1 is all about. And it really is stunning. I try not to engage too much in hyperbole. I'm accused of that when it comes to this issue appropriately. It is outrageous, but it goes back to this issue.
Maybe this one deserves a little hyperbole. Yeah. I mean, in some sense, it kind of opens up the floodgates in my mind. I don't know that we're really going to understand the true effect of this ruling until we get another person like Donald Trump in the White House
again. Right. We've got, if you believe that we have now got kings, we've got a king in the White House right now. He's chosen not to pursue any of those things. He's not engaging in criminal activity.
You mean King Joe Biden? You're
King
talking
Joe
about?
Biden, okay, right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But in a different iteration of a presidency, including one that we could elect in a little under 50 days or so, you could get someone there and says, you know what? And the specific thing that again outrages me, you're not being surprised to hear me say this, is when it comes to the Department of Justice, you can pick up the phone and you can tell your attorney general to do virtually anything.
I want you, attorney general, so-and-so, go after James Santel.
Go after James Santel, make up evidence, put together witnesses to lie, suborn perjury, now, undermine the grand jury process, and that's okay.
Just a moment, but it might be okay for the president to do that, but if attorney general so-and-so follows through with it, aren't they themselves liable? And everybody else that would go do that themselves be liable, or are they also acting in their official capacity?
Right. That is the issue, is it not? Right. I mean, they would say, of course, well, wait a minute, my boss told me to do that.
I was only following orders, Jim.
Where have we heard that in history? Right. Right. To great horrific consequences. But that's the argument. Interestingly, if I were the attorney general appointed, I would not be appointed. I would not accept anything in this administration. If there is a second Trump administration, but I were the attorney general appointed by Donald Trump, and I was told go out there and suborn perjury, do these kinds of things, or even worse in the conduct of my job, I would consult my own attorneys about whether or not I've got that exposure. And maybe or maybe not do it. We know well that if you don't do what Donald Trump says, you know what happens. Let's talk about Jeff Sessions for a while, right? So we know that issue is out there. Interestingly, the Supreme Court decision on July 1 says nothing about other people, just talks about the presidency itself and the president, that what he or she one day might do. It is an interesting issue. It also underscores the craziness of this. We're even having this discussion, right? About whether or not people on direction of a chief executive themselves can be prosecuted for crimes. Let's be clear. We're talking about crimes. We're not talking about civil offenses. We're not talking about policy decisions, even decisions about going to war or that kind of thing, economic decisions, policies related to agriculture and economics and housing and all kinds of things. We're talking about committing crimes. Supreme Court has said there's a presumption of immunity for all that. There is absolute immunity when you reach down the street and you call your attorney general. That's stunning, and people should be horrified by that.
I am horrified by that, Jim. And above and beyond that, the guy could just, or whoever this corrupt chief executive would be, to bend the system to their will at the best, the most they can, because why not?
Right, why not? Right.
You know, just pass out the pardons.
Absolutely.
Don't worry, but we already saw, wasn't that also something like, hey, I'm going to pardon, and he did pardon some folks.
Absolutely. There's an Office of the Pardon Attorney inside the Department of Justice that kind of moderates this. Donald Trump doesn't really care about that, doesn't need to anymore in the future.
Yeah, we got a process for that.
It's very, very simple right out there. And, you know, to get, again, even more serious, if that's possible, this is what Sonia Sotomayor talked about. She said, you've got a loaded gun sitting there right next to the president, and the president can pick it up and use it or not at his or her discretion. Again, can I mention the word stunning, shocking, outrageous? Once again, that's it.
You may, but only if we're talking about Chief Justice Roberts, because he had a lot to do with this. We're going to talk about that as well. Take some of your calls, 855-752-4842. James Santel, and it was Dom Sutton.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines are open. Join us 855-752-4842. Don't forget, those of you playing the Civic Media statewide text to win contest, go for the green or gold. The magic super duper cool word for your entry today is ring. Download the Civic Media app. Find your favorite station. Text ring. And you will have a chance to win in this statewide Civic Media contest. Thank you all for playing. Once again, 855-752-4842. I believe we have David in San Francisco on the lines. Let's get to David. Welcome, David. Happy Friday. What do you got?
Oh, well, thanks. I was interested in Project 2025 and who their corporate sponsors are. And then, of course, the little person can always flex their muscles by refusing to buy any product that those corporations are churning out. So, it would seem to me that since you've got a daily show, it could be that you could start your show with a new corporate sponsor to boycott every, lift them out just one.
Who are the corporate sponsors, David? Do you know any offhand? Like, what is someone actually like giving them money to do it? It's like the Heritage Foundation. I get that. I'm not buying anything they're selling ever. But are you talking like publicly traded product companies, like, you know, what are you talking about?
It's Procter and Gamble supporting this somehow, right?
Well, it's interesting because that Harlan Crow, I believe his website is crowdevelopment.com, and he owns more than just land down in Texas. If you go to his crowdevelopment.com, and then you can basically target the land that he owns. And, you know, in the old days, and when I'm talking old days, I'm, you know, post-1776.
Thank you for that.
after they won, they didn't want to be leached that the money was sucked out of town the moment you bought something from a sponsor of the king, a Tory, basically. And so they did a lot to boycott the products of the Tories, and they pretty much forced the Tories out of business. And they developed laws so that, for example, a bank couldn't deal, they couldn't do business outside of a given city. It wasn't just outside of a certain county. And, you know, there were, it was a pretty tough thing for a bank to have a charter that allowed them to do business in. And they didn't want all the money being, you know.
Sorry, David. Yeah, you're fading out. Thank you for the call, David. You know, I hear what you're saying. And here's the difficult thing for me as a host on a radio station that sells advertising to corporate sponsors and, of course, you know, groups and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, I get it. We decide every day, every minute with how we spend our dollars, you know, those judgments we make all the time. And you can make a purposeful judgment not to go somewhere and buy something because of a person or companies or their position on politics. Certainly, you know, I'm a little more cautious of that, given the circumstances that I wouldn't want anyone boycotting any of my sponsors or our sponsors here at Civic Media because of they didn't like something that I said. No, I can't imagine anyone would not like something I said. Jim,
never,
but,
never.
But I'm not to disavow that or dissuade that. Certainly, people can do that. I encourage you to go buy and follow buy products and use services of the folks that have a similar mindset to you. I mean, if you're able to do that, great. But here's the other thing, man. David, and thank you for the call. I got an iPhone, man. That thing's made by Foxconn. You know, with some really tough labor. And, you know, so they're in everything we do, we're always making those kinds of choices, whether we want to or not. I'm using my iPhone because I like the technology. Mm-hmm. And with that comes, you know, everything that comes with it.
Right. And if some of those companies with whom you may have some disagreements about where their investments are nonetheless supporting as they do on this radio station, others supporting First Amendment discussion.
Right.
That's a good thing, right? Yeah. We can agree to disagree on maybe some corporate decisions, but if the consequences of their economic investment is freedom of speech and freedom to say things that may be different in depending upon who the listeners are, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And I do go to Penzi Spices. I know right. Trump's not a big fan, but I mean, they're around here and they're great and they are not shy about their politics, which happened to coincide with me, but more above and beyond that, they got good products right. and good folks working in those stores, at least that I know locally here. 855-752-4842. Mark from the SAC, you're up. Happy Friday, man. What do you got for us?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And Jim has said a lot that I, you know, agree with, and that was one of my concerns, is that given the president immunity, that he could just order his minions to do whatever he wants to do, and he could just claim, well, they got immunity by extension through me, and that if I understand what Jim said right, the president himself would have to commit whatever act, and that it doesn't fall over, that his minions could do what he wants him to. And I mean, getting back to the point, where they pulled this decision out of is just still continues to baffle me, because just loyalty to Donald Trump. And what's disturbing to me is that, I mean, I'm just a country boy from far northern Wisconsin, but I can at least read. And the Constitution explicitly says the president can be impeached for, what is it, treason, bribery, high crimes, and other misdemeanors.
Misdemeanors, yeah.
So if they're saying that, it actually means that the president can actually commit a crime. I mean, that what the Supreme Court does is it completely upended any kind of impeachment against the president at all.
Well, he can commit the crime, Mark. As long as it's an official act, you know, no more of those personal crimes. Like all the crime right. I'm going to do when I become president, Jim, I'm going to make sure I wrap them all in the cloak of official acts, because that won't be weird and terrible at all.
Absolutely. And this is a part of the dispute that's going on right now. Say if I do them in the Oval Office, does that, by virtue of where I am geographically, does that turn a personal private initiative of some kind to keep in power? Is that suddenly an official act? And again, that's what the lawyers are arguing now, right? That virtually anything the president does in the West Wing, in that Oval Office and in the adjacent office right there, those kinds of things, you can't touch them. And that's the concern more than anything, as Mark is underscoring here, it is going to lead to all, if we do get to that point where you've got a president who is doing these kinds of things, then we're going to have all sorts of pretrial motions in what, criminal prosecutions, arguing once again about what is official, what is unofficial, And the Supreme Court, again, just one more way in which they have really, really, to use the legal phrase, mucked this up, right? And changed the way in which we understand the executive branch.
Didn't Justice Amy Coney Barrett kind of line up, hey, is this an official act? Yes.
Right.
Yes. Is this an official act? She went down a list of things.
Right.
To Trump's attorneys when they were making this decision, and Trump's attorneys acknowledged very specific things that were not official acts.
Right.
Chuck can just go take that list and Smith just say, okay, here are the ones we know they already said yes to.
Absolutely.
Just pare it down and go get it done.
And let's say there will still be arguments in front of Tanya Chutkan about this because lawyers don't shut up too often, as is my illustration
with you, Don.
Right. But the reality is, yeah, that's exactly, it underscores again the craziness of this assignment given to Tanya Chutkan, right? Because they hand her this homework and say, okay, now we've written all these things. Now you figure it out. Now
here's
compare
what we wrote.
This,
you tell us what
right?
we mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
And take a look at the superseding indictment. Tell them what survives, what doesn't. We know, once again, I'm sounding a bit like a broken record this afternoon, but we know what doesn't survive is all the stuff related to the Department of Justice. That's gone. That is out of the indictment. And again, America should recognize the Supreme Court basically dismissed a portion of that indictment by virtue of establishing absolute immunity for things related to Department of Justice. But it does, once again, underscore with the terrible nature of what Tanya Chutkan's got to do. She's got to compare the allegations in what is now the superseding, the second indictment, with what the Supreme Court said, which one of these things survives? That's what's going on.
What happened with Jeffrey Clark over there, right? So he came in, he was a willing guy to do anything. The DOJ, Trump wanted him to do the things that the DOJ wouldn't do. They threatened mass resignations if he did.
Right.
But Jeffrey, I mean, if you're going to write a letter, compose a letter, send it to state legislatures or state DAs or whatever the case is, your legal folks over there, and say, hey, this is what we found.
The Department of Justice is telling you that you've got voter fraud in your state.
This is what we found. You better go. Right. And that's totally false.
Right.
There's no consequence to Jeffrey Miller or anybody in that role to say and do such a thing. Is that where we stand right now?
That seems to be awfully close to where we stand right now. Again, it raises the issue of whether a Jeffrey Clark, who again is an upper level management person at the time this happens, is he covered by the immunity decision? But if again, Donald Trump says to him, this is a good letter, Jeff, send this out. And
right.
Oh, by the way, those fake electors. Yeah, do that to encourage them as along the way, appear in front of legislative committees around the country and tell them the same thing. And he is directing all his Department of Justice people doing that. That's the consequence. And that's the question about how far it extends. Jeffrey Clark, we know, is in trouble around the country for engaging this kind of conduct, a defendant in many of those forums we've already talked about. But it doesn't mean that the significance of the immunity decision can in any way be overstated. It is just dramatic.
Yeah, and it's going to be there for a while.
It'll be there for a while. Interesting. People say, well, gee, you know, will there come a time down the road when the Supreme Court will look back on that and say, kind of like Plessy versus Ferguson, Korematsu, those kinds of blots on our Supreme Court history. And it's difficult. You think, okay, you got to have another situation like this where a president engages in crimes. Maybe here's my thought on that. Maybe what you do is over time, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but maybe in a future lifetime here in the Supreme Court, you begin to draw footnotes in cases involving the authority of a president in a civil area, maybe in a maritime, a war type situation, economically, you begin to draw footnotes and say, you know, that Trump versus United States case in 2024, no longer good law. We're not going to follow that anymore. And maybe you effectively overrule it in the same way that John Roberts has recently, for a number of years, been overruling Korematsu. Again, we've never had another situation, thankfully, in which we have interned people based, American citizens based upon their heritage.
I mean, I don't know how you do a mass deportation as Trump and the MAGAs want to do unless you round them all up, put them somewhere first.
Right,
you got to have a processing place.
Exactly. And right now, in Korematsu, traditionally, it technically is still good law. John Roberts, to his credit, lots of criticism of him today, but to his credit, has been dropping these footnotes saying, you know, no, we're not going to support Korematsu. That was bad law. But doing it by footnotes and what really is called dicta, which means it really doesn't have the compelling force of law, but it means we're not going to support this. Maybe that's what you can do. But right now, on this September 20th of 2024, we've got a country where, again, the Constitution has been changed.
That's not great. 855-752-4842. bear with me here a little bit. Some reporting over at the Raw story talking about New York Times piece. What they say, Justice Roberts has been exposed. Legal observers Dahlia Lithwick and Mark Joseph Stern wrote for Slate. He may pretend to be deliberate, the deliberate moderating force on the Supreme Court, Jim, but behind the scenes, he has become as reactionary as the rest of the court's right wing. This became clear, they write, when they handed down this decision, as we're talking about. They say they have an expose on how the court arrived at this decision. While the liberals were trying to moderate the opinion, the far-right justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch privately wanted to punt it until after the election. Here's a quote from Slate. It was Roberts who decided that Trump and Trumpism would prevail in all three insurrection cases, and he did not, in this instance, follow in the wake of the court's aggressive conservative maximalists. He was the aggressive conservative maximalist, and he created majority opinions in his own image.
And he wrote them. He was the author of them.
They paint a picture of him as arrogant, uncompromising, and fanatically convinced the country would applaud his judgment in favor of Trump.
Right.
He inveighed that the Supreme Court should take the case, which would hold up Trump's criminal trial slated for the summer, but also previewed how the justices would reverse the lower court ruling. Quote, I think it is likely that we will view the separation of powers analysis differently from the Supreme Court, he warned. From that point onward, it appears he was committed to sweeping decision for the former president. Never seemed to wonder if a massive victory for Trump might imperil American democracy. Well, he apparently, according to the reporting, was very convinced that the country would applaud.
Would soar above politics and persuade the public that this is all good stuff. I guess you were wrong, John.
The Dom Salvi Show, James Santel, 855-752-4842. Coming back with more of this in just a minute. And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines are open. Join us, 855-752-4842. Happy Friday to us all. Last shot this segment for the goal for the green or gold text to win statewide contest. The word this hour, ring. Give us a ring. Let us know your thoughts. Ring. So go ahead to download the Civic Media app and text that to your favorite station for a chance to win the statewide contest. There's money. There's tickets. It's going to be cool. Thanks for playing, James Santel. Thank you for playing, hanging out in the studio with me, Aaron, on the board, on the phones. Once again, 855-75-CIVIC. Slate had a piece out. New York Times also commenting on this, on Justice Roberts. And I got to be honest, man. I mean, I thought this cat was supposed to be a kind of a...
Yes, yeah.
Moderate, right?
He's in the middle. He's the guy who's bringing everybody together, right? Mm-hmm. Recall as well to your good point, Dom, that this is a man who is trying very hard not to overrule Roe versus Wade. Remember these stories? He was trying to find that middle ground, if there is one, between not overruling it or overruling it, trying very hard to say, okay, we'll let this particular statute stand, but we're not expressly overruling Roe versus Wade. That's a man who's still looking desperately for compromise. It didn't happen. Because the conservatives on the bench said, no, no, no. And Sam Alito wrote this opinion that basically said.
And then they got leaked.
Right. Exactly. The draft gets leaked and probably.
Cemented kind of everybody's position.
Precisely. Then. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. And Sam Alito goes on to say, no, no. Roe versus Wade was badly decided in 1970. Not just badly. Wrongly decided in 1973. This is a 180 degree turn. We're getting rid of this. John Roberts, thank you very much for your service. But we're not going to moderate this one bit. And so, once again, you've got this perception out there that John Roberts, although, again, in voting rights, he hasn't been especially good, guns kind of all over the map, if you will. But he's got this kind of reputation for being the guy who brings everybody together.
That's what they sold us
exactly,
on, man. That's what they
right?
sold it when they,
right?
when he was at the hearings, right?
Yep. He was going to call balls and strikes. Remember that testimony? Mm-hmm. That was what a justice is, and a chief justice does in particular. And again, we know that there's some indication he's tried to do that. But boy, if the reporting here is right, and again, it seems interesting, too, that all these internal memorandums are once again being leaked out there. I mean,
the Supreme Court.
From the Supreme Court, right? So somebody is there who wants the world to know about what this deliberation is all about. It is not surprising that there would be memorandums. That happens all the time when justices are deciding what to do here. But we're getting an insight into exactly the extent to which this was not John Roberts trying to find a place between Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas and Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson. as you just read, he was leading the charge.
Yeah, man.
He was the guy who was saying, no, we're delivering three, count them, three decisive victories for Donald Trump in three different areas. We're keeping him on the ballot in Colorado.
Right.
We're giving him immunity for the things that we were now identifying. And oh, by the way, Tanya Chutkan, tell us what we're saying about all this, right? And the third one, which kind of gets lost in the fray, is this Fisher case, in which he also said that the statute under which a number of these rioters on January 6th, including actually a couple of the counts against Donald Trump, very narrowly reading it so that you can only charge if you've got documents, you've got materials and products. It's kind of a wonky thing to say, but that's also a victory, if you will, for the rioters. And it could, in the end, the other thing on Tanya Chutkan's lap, if you will, plate, if you will, is deciding whether or not that decision in Fisher also comes to the benefit of Donald Trump. He is charged. Two of the four counts against him are charged under Section 1512. Those are the Fisher counts. So the upshot of all this, wonky though it is, down the rabbit hole, admittedly, it's a lot, is that John Roberts leads the charge. And he says, you know what, we're going to give Donald Trump the trifecta here. We're going to give him immunity. We're going to put him on the keep him on the ballot in Colorado. And oh, by the way, we're going to ensure that the prosecution of him under at least two of those counts may be thrown out as well. That's a big result orchestrated by the Chief Justice.
And apparently, according to the reporting, that he thought that, you know, he would be applauded for his judgment.
Absolutely. He talks about how our perspective must be more far-sighted. Case like this one, focusing on the transient results, could have profound consequences for the separation of powers, the future of our republic. Lofty words, John. Yeah, you're right. It does right. have consequences.
It certainly does.
But not in the way that you were thinking, yeah. I'm guessing.
Be careful what you wish for, Jim.
Exactly, right? And we also have this revelation, which again is, it's inside baseball stuff, but you've got then, when you're distributing these memorandums among each other, beginning in February,
wow.
as early as February 22nd, I think, as this goes on. And yes, just to let you know how there's a certain amount of fawning that goes on inside the Supreme Court. You've got Brett Kavanaugh, after he reads the Chief Justice's first proposals on it, he says, that you've written, Mr. Chief Justice, an extraordinary opinion. Thank you for your exceptional work. Neil Gorsuch can't be outdone. He says, I join Brett in thanking you for your remarkable work, Mr. Chief Justice.
Wow.
And so we've got, again, insight. Not surprising that these memorandums are being written. That will happen, of course. Yeah. That's the deliberative process that goes on routinely. The revelation, I think, is not only, again, as you've just accurately noted, the extent to which this was a John Roberts who was leading this force and saying, no, we're going in the we're not going to be, we don't care about those liberals over there on the left side of the bench, prompting again Sonia Sotomayor to say, you know, you have undermined democracy here. We don't care about those folks. And secondarily, it is a footnote to all this. Somebody inside the Supreme Court wants us to know about this. Fascinating, right?
That is very fascinating. We do have Mike on the line. We'll get you, give you 60 seconds. Mike, what do you got for us?
Hey, Dom. Hey, Jim. I really think this circles back around to the presidential election. In the past, we've had it out there that a nominee would look for a certain kind of Supreme Court justice. I think we should be looking at Supreme Court justices, and the president nominee should be saying, we're looking for, you know, justices who are going to be anti-corruption and anti this new ruling that we've been dealing with for a couple months about presidential immunity. I just think that should become the new Dem talking point.
Hey, thanks for the call, Mike. Certainly there should be, but yeah, they all said when they got up there, yes, we support, or we, you know, Roe v. Wade is established.
Stare decisis. Right, that's the way the world is.
It's amazing what they'll say and then eventually what they do. So judgment matters, and the people matter. And you matter. You're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel, sticking around for another hour. Join us. Callers, be patient. 855-752-4842.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.